to see it. I'm a first-hand witness, completely blown away every day by the explosion of this platform, but the glory does not belong to Stu Peters. This is God's platform, and all glory be to God Almighty. Why is Tony Fauci still running around free instead of hanging by the end of a noose somewhere?
Oh, I hope you had a fantastic Independence Day weekend. It is now the 5th of July, 2022. Welcome to the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu. At the end of May, we introduced all of you to Rodney Brooks. Rodney Brooks is the man who went into the hospital last September with a moderate case of COVID. But just as he was starting to improve, they shoved him onto this deadly remdesivir protocol and his health promptly collapsed. He suffered from organ failure, pneumonia, a MRSA staph infection, a urinary tract infection, and of course, malnutrition. He's had 3 heart attacks. He's been put into 3 medically induced comas and suffered a stroke. Well, his wife Vera has now been browbeaten by hospital staff who want her now to endorse a do not resuscitate order. It's all horrifying. And while we wish that we could say things have gotten better, the truth is it's still very hard going. Rodney has now been vomiting blood and is back into the ICU. Meanwhile, the Brooks are in big trouble. They basically live at the hospital and are facing a possible eviction from their home in Wisconsin. Well, now another friend of this show, Dr. Brian Artis, has been stepping in to help, and he joins us now. Dr. Artis, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate you being here.
It's great to be here, Stu, and what a tragedy. This has been a 10-month nightmare for the Brooks family, so kudos to you and your team with helping to expose this horrific story. Actually, they ended up in October in the hospital. He ended up on remdesivir. 2 days later, his kidneys failed so intensely that the medical doctors in the hospital at St. Luke's there actually took him off of remdesivir themselves, which was great of them to recognize the tragedy that was occurring to his kidneys. He was going into such severe acute kidney failure that even the end circulatory failure, that the tips of his fingers and his toes were dying within the first 48 hours. So they took him off of remdesivir, and then they said, we're going to send him home the next day. The very next day, they came in and told Vera, out of nowhere, your husband's heart's going to stop if we don't put him on all these other drugs, do all these other procedures, which included inducing him into a coma for 7 weeks and sedating him. And they did that for 7 weeks, in which you exposed that great story. They transferred away from that hospital. They actually ended up in Dallas, Texas, which is where they are now. I actually got to interview them about 2 weeks ago at a hotel they were staying at, and it was horrific to share in that this part of the journey with Vera and with Rodney. 2 days after I was with him, he actually started vomiting up what was reported as, from his wife, it looked like a gallon of blood, which physically is probably not possible because we only carry about 1.2 gallons of total blood. But it was a lot of blood. He ended up back into a hospital. He's at Baylor, downtown Dallas. And just this morning, I was reported by a team of advocates that work directly with the Dr. Artis Show team. Graith Care, Priscilla Romans, and her team have been advocating with Vera and with Rodney at Baylor Downtown Hospital. And even this morning, they said this has been a great example of what advocacy and ICU teams can look like. And the ICU docs even thanked the advocate this morning, Priscilla Romans, for having their team helping them articulate how to help him the most. So he is currently off of sedation drugs as of this weekend, and they're hoping to be able to remove the sedation tube. Of course, losing that much blood that he lost a couple weeks ago, they had to do blood transfusions. They did sedate him and intubate him, but he is now off of the sedation drugs. He is slowly waking up, and they're expecting over the next few days, they're hoping to be able to pull the tube out and extubate him, and then hopefully he'll be able to continue to recover. That's the hope right now.
So if we have 1.2 gallons of blood in our body, that's, you know, like you said, medically probably impossible to be puking up a gallon of it. But suffice it to say, that's how she illustrated it. So it was a lot of blood. Do you attribute all of this to the remdesivir protocol?
I actually blame it on the entire hospital protocol. And I would like to expose this. St. Luke's Hospital did a horrible thing. The remdesivir they gave him for 2 days, this set up his acute kidney failure and liver failure that he is in still. He has massive amounts of water retention. He just cannot get out. They're actually draining fluid out of him again today because they shut down his kidneys so severely with remdesivir and damaged his liver. Stu, the whites of his eyes are yellow. His skin color, which is my skin color, he's Caucasian Irish color, is actually greenish brown. It looks like he's been, I can't even tell you, massively poisoned. That is jaundice from the severe liver damage. And that started with the remdesivir protocol. They then started using other drugs like chemotherapy drugs, propofol, sedation drugs over a 7-week period that destroyed his entire body. The ends of his fingers and toes right now are like, it's like petrified wood. I'm not kidding. He taps them on the counters and it's like rocks. The amputation of his digits is the least of their concerns right now because the severe liver failure, kidney failure, heart failure from those drugs. He's had all three organs were failing as a result of remdesivir. And I want to share this with the story with your audience, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
When I showed up in the hotel, Vera, the wife, is talking about, I don't understand, Dr. Artis. She's crying to me going, I don't understand, Dr. Artis. Why? Why, when I took him in the first day, did they put him on remdesivir the next day? And then a second day, they gave him remdesivir. On the first day, the tips of his toes and fingers turned beet red. On the second day, they start turning black. Then they check his kidney levels and he's failing. So they take him off remdesivir and then they tell Vera, we're going to send him home tomorrow because they've been having him on oxygen too to breathe, not intubated, on oxygen. They continue to tell her they're going to send her home the next day. So they have him stay overnight the third night. And on the next morning, they come in and say, your husband's heart's going to stop in the next 24 to 48 hours unless we do all of these therapies and drugs, which is when they sedated him, put him into a coma, and he was poisoned for the next 7 days or 7 weeks. When Vera repeats this 3 times in a row to me, she's sitting there going, I don't understand why they said they were going to send him home. And I do not understand why the next day they decided to drug him with all this stuff and tell us his heart was going to fail. Stu, this is what I said. And their whole world needs to hear this. I looked at Vera and I said, I don't even know the date you took him to the hospital, but I can tell you what happened. They're this predictable when it comes to hospital protocols that you and I have been exposing for the last 2 years. I said, I guarantee you, you took him in on a Friday evening and they actually admitted him. On Saturday, they gave him remdesivir. Sunday, they gave him remdesivir. They took him off remdesivir. When they saw the damage their protocol was doing, they were going to send you home the next day or convince you they were, left you overnight. And then on a Monday morning, when your healthcare insurance policy called the hospital back to tell you what the hospital would get paid for everything related to COVID in Rodney's case, the administrators of the hospital, the medical doctors, then came to your room and had to convince you that something awful was going to happen to Rodney if you didn't do all of these protocols related to COVID, which is sedate him, intubate him, put him in a coma, put him on sedation drugs. I said, and for the next 7 weeks, they maximized the payout of his healthcare insurance policy. And I looked at her and I said, do you have a good health insurance policy, Vera? And she goes, we have one of the best paying ones in the state. And I said, who is it? And she said, United Healthcare. And then she opens her phone, Stu, and she goes, oh my God, Dr. Artis, and starts to cry and goes, I took him in on October 1st. That was a Friday. Monday morning is when they came in and said his heart was going to stop and they needed to do all the rest of these treatments. And then I said, it's so obvious that on Monday would have been the day that they were able, United Healthcare went back to work on a Monday morning, called the hospital to let them know, the guy you admitted on Friday night has this payout for each of these codes related to COVID therapy. And then she shows me her invoice from the hospital for those 7 weeks. Stu, the United Healthcare, his policy was billed $140,000+ for 7 weeks of poisoning that almost killed the guy. And United Healthcare paid out $137,000+. And then they billed Vera and Rod $2,000 for their cash payout for the remainder. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
This is exactly what happened. And now they have lost almost everything. They were transferring between Wisconsin and California, ended up in Dallas. He was so sick by the time he got here being transported that he stayed here and was at a hotel. We were going to try to get him in infusions of glutathione, vitamin C, and help him recover. But what happened from the drug therapies for 7 weeks of poisoning at St. Luke's Hospital that they got paid $130,000 for, it caused erosion of his esophagus. And that's why he keeps coughing up blood. He's bleeding internally from the detrimental effects of the drug treatments from St. Luke's Hospital, including remdesivir and the other ones. Their life has been uprooted, upended, even financially. And I just want to give kudos to And a big shout out to Baylor Downtown. They've done a great job of working with the advocates at gravecare.com, Priscilla Romans and their team. This is what advocacy could have looked like. And I'm hoping it's not too late. He's opening his eyes barely now and moving his toes now that he's been off the sedation drugs for a few days. And we're hoping he's strong enough to be able to remove the tube in the next day or two. And then hopefully we can help him get out of the hospital and help him to recover.
I just want to remind everybody, this was a previously healthy, strong, large man, rode motorcycles, traveled the country. This guy is now, I mean, the condition that he's in now, you described it, a greenish brown skin, jaundiced eyes. And we're talking about the whites of his eyes are not just like a hint of yellow. They are like through and through yellow. This is poisonous envenomation. You called it. Watch the Water was a smashing global success. You have cited the international medical community has acknowledged what a smashing success this thing was. Banned from Austria in just a matter of days, completely from the entire country banned because they don't want you knowing the truth is that they are putting a price tag on the human life. They are committing murder for money. They are killing for cash. They know exactly what they're doing. The insurance companies are reporting this increase in deaths. That's because they're paying to kill you and your loved ones and your family. And Dr. Brian Artis is uncovering it all. Thank you so much for stepping in to help out with this. Also, there is a Give, Send, Go for the Brooks family. We're going to put that link at StuPeters.com as well as below this video on the Stu Peters Network Rumble. I'm sure that you can find it at GraithCare.com as well. Big shout out to Priscilla Romans, who's been on this program. She's a friend of this show. Graith doing a wonderful job, and you as well, Dr. Brian Artis. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you being here.
We love you, Stu, and your program. Thank you, guys.
We love you as well. And also, the price on a fetal brain. How about that? And who's buying these fetal brains? What is Frazzle Drip? What is Adrenochrome? Whatever happened to Pizzagate? Why did Hillary Clinton say that she was going to be sacrificing a chicken in her backyard to Moloch? We have been digging into those questions, looking for the answers. You're never going to believe it. Stay tuned for this program today is going to air something that is going to blow your mind. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. The Stu Peters Show continues in 60 seconds. All right. While these people are locking down the entire world, banning documentaries from entire countries, removing your freedom of speech, robbing you of your individual liberties, stealing your freedom, shredding the Constitution, they are also coming after your money. My good friends over at Gold Co. are going to help you to protect everything that you've worked hard to earn and even harder to save with gold and silver. Call my good friends at Gold Co. 855-706-GOLD. Again, 855-706-GOLD. While they are separating you from your loved ones and killing them for cash, murdering them for money, while they are ripping you off of $40 billion and more, hundreds of billions of dollars before the entire Ukrainian false flag conflict is over with, they're going to come after your retirement savings. Everything that you've worked hard to save can be protected with gold and silver from Gold Co. 855-706-GOLD. Again, 855-706-GOLD. Get up to $10,000 or more in free silver with a qualified account at Gold Co. 855-706-GOLD. One more time, 855-706-GOLD. Under the cover of COVID, Australia has now become the Western testing ground for China-style social credit control systems. For example, starting last fall, all company directors in Australia must have a digital ID. No digital ID, no company for you. But now Australia has also adopted a new point system for welfare recipients, which post-COVID welfare recipients are now a huge portion of the population in every country in one form or another. But starting this week, Australians receiving unemployment benefits must accumulate at least 100 points every month to continue receiving their benefits. In the old days, Australians getting benefits just had to show that they had applied to a certain number of jobs over the past month. And you can still get points by doing that. But now you can get points in other ways too, by doing the things that the government wants you to do. Some of it is stuff that makes sense, get a driver's license or learn English. But some of it is a whole lot more vague. You can get points by volunteering at something that the Australian government approves of or by doing non-vocational personal development. Of course, this is how they get their foot in the door. And now that they've made it so that benefits are conditioned on a social credit system, they'll be able to tweak that however they want, you can imagine. They could take away points if you violate COVID rules, or if you say the wrong thing online, or if you join the wrong protest group. That's how it's unfolding in China right now, and it'll be the same way here in America, make no mistake. But more than a few people have noticed that Australia's current government policies seem just a tad demonic. So maybe it's fitting that right now Australia is battling positively biblical flooding in the Sydney area. All of this is after they already had biblical wildfires a couple years ago, too. But according to our sources, it gets stranger, a whole lot stranger. Supposedly, some people have been ordered to evacuate their homes even though they aren't in flood zones or even particularly close to them. Our Australian correspondent Maria Z joins us to discuss this. Maria, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Stu. And you're absolutely right about the future of this social credit system being tweaked. And I say that because JobSwitch has a disclaimer on the workforceaustralia.gov.au website, and it says, JobSwitch has been developed for public policy purposes using methodologies set out in the World Economic Forum report towards a reskilling revolution, a future of jobs for all. Sounds great. Let's reskill. Let's all have a future of jobs. But as we know, these people want a universal basic income. They don't want you to work and be successful unless you're part of their system. And of course, that's evidenced by the fact that digital IDs are now applying to company directors, but not only company directors, non-for-profits, charities. So if you're trying to do something good for society and it contradicts what they say you should be doing, e.g. the people that were helping flood victims last time having their bank accounts frozen, well, your social credit score or your digital ID, which is universal and will be yours for life, will be affected by you not complying or doing something other than what Big Brother wants you to do. And another example of what could happen is if you don't comply with climate change policies, which we see are now being pushed in Australia. We've got our climate change state of emergency declared in South Australia. That's just the beginning of our troubles. And in regards to this weather, Stu, I think Australians, in British news channel recently did a comparison. Sydney had 733 millimetres of rainfall between Friday and Monday. That's London has 615 millimetres annually. That's how much rain we've had. And people are demanding answers. Why are we seeing stripes in the air every single day right before we have this much rain? This is being engineered. We are being pushed towards a climate emergency. This is not a real climate emergency. I'm actually taking action as well myself, Stu, to demand some answers from some of our officials as to why this is occurring. But we can see how this climate emergency is being manufactured to get us used to the idea of climate emergency, pushing us towards this digital system. All the while, how many jobs have been destroyed? How many people, as you said, now are welfare recipients? And they've got to become accustomed to this point system. It's all linking up to this new religion of climate change that these people are going to push on us.
It's life and death. I mean, if you can't provide for your family, you're going to die. Your kids are going to die. Your spouse, your loved ones, your neighbors, your fellow church parishioners or congregation. Everybody's going to die if you don't comply with the government. That's what they're telling you. And they're affecting this, you say, by stripes in the air, controlling or manipulating the weather and poisoning people through chemtrails. Is that right? I've got about a minute left here.
Stu, it's undeniable. The number of photos that, I've seen traveling around Australia, the amount of stripes that we have every single day in our air. And the scientists have admitted that they're doing this. They say that they're doing cloud seeding and other things like that in order to combat climate change. When in fact, and according to a geoengineering expert that I've had on recently, Dane Wiginton, it's doing the opposite. It's actually causing climate catastrophes, as we're seeing in Australia. This amount of rain is not normal. And yes, people were being evacuated from their homes, even though they're not in flood-affected areas. Now, we could say that that's a precautionary method that's being used. Or we could say that, no, this is actually conditioning you to get used to climate emergencies. And of course, they'll blame you. You've caused the climate emergency because you've eaten too much meat this month. That's where we're going.
Maria Z, thank you so much for all of this. This is something that we're obviously going to continue to follow here at the Stu Peters Show, because what happens there in Australia is obviously the prototype for what they would love to implement here. And we say it every time we do a segment together, that means don't let go of your guns, period, here
every
in
time.
America. We see how that happened. Maria Z, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Coming up on the Stu Peters Show, why are fetal brains being sold all over the place? How is this connected to CPS, child sex trafficking, human trafficking, and a whole lot more? You will not believe what this program is going to air as the Stu Peters Show continues in 60 seconds. Go nowhere.
The food supply is in peril. War has wiped out grain stores. Mysterious fires have consumed dozens of processing plants. And the Biden junta is paying farmers not to grow.
We could increase and disseminate more rapidly food shortages.
But there's hope from heaven. Heavensharvest.com.
That stuff is perfect. It's 25-year shelf life. You can buy it, stick it in your closet, and forget about it.
Christian-owned, kingdom-operated, is ready to help your family prepare for famine, pestilence, and another pandemic. Join Heaven's Harvest Food Club today and enjoy the benefits of a stockpile in peace of mind. No cost, free shipping, cancel anytime, preparation on demand, water filters, seeds, and vacuum-sealed buckets of grub. Call today for 1 month's supply of food for less than the cost of a daily meal, or fill your stores for a whole year with food that lasts. Don't wait. Prepare for the devil's worst. HeavensHarvest.com, your angel investor for enduring the end times.
The supposed justification for trapping 300 million Americans in their homes and shutting down their businesses and denying them the right to worship God was to save lives. By now, it's obvious that the lockdowns did nothing to stop COVID and did nothing to save lives in the long run. But actually, it's probably worse than that. It's not just that lockdowns didn't save lives, they actively destroyed them. In 2019, America had 70,000 drug overdose deaths. In 2020, that shot up to almost 91,000. But if you look at the year-long period after the lockdowns hit from April 2020 to April of 21, in a single year, there were more than 100,000 overdose deaths. And that's just overdoses. Post-COVID, we have more murders, more car crash deaths, and more deaths from every other disease that isn't COVID. Everywhere you look, it's obvious. When we shut down our economy, we also shut down life itself and caused tens or hundreds of thousands of premature deaths. People are dropping dead everywhere. Our next guest, Victoria White, understands all of this too well. Victoria is the mother of four daughters whom she's homeschooled for the past 7 years. Victoria has always voted in a conservative way, but she otherwise was not really politically active. That all changed in 2020, though, when one of her brothers committed suicide. Victoria believes that that suicide was brought on by despair caused by the lockdowns. It's the kind of death thousands of Americans have had a close experience with. Since her brother's death, Victoria has been far more politically engaged. She realized that with the Democrats as the party of lockdowns, if they regained power, they would extend the crisis endlessly, meaning more lockdowns, more business closures, more overdoses, and more suicides. So Victoria attended the January 6th rally. While she was there, she personally prevented two men from breaking a Capitol window. That's not just a claim, by the way. That was all on video. Then, as the riot continued, the mob pushed her into a tunnel beneath the Capitol, where a DC police lieutenant savagely beat her with a baton while she was helpless. As far as anyone can tell, she was just beaten because she was at the Capitol and wearing a Trump hat. Despite that, Victoria was arrested, tied up with zip ties, and tossed into the back of a police vehicle. She's been facing the loss of her freedom ever since and is looking at as many as 30 years in federal prison for doing absolutely nothing wrong. Apparently wearing a Trump hat is a capital offense in this country. Victoria White joins us now. Victoria, thank you so much for being here. First of all, we're incredibly sorry for the loss of your brother and everything that you're battling now. You face up to 30 years in federal prison for being present at a rally that you were asked by your president to be at. And by and large, all of the video evidence suggests this was a guided tour put on by the very DC police department that then savagely beat you. Does that about sum it up?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So now you're looking at 30 years. I mean, take us through this.
It's unreal. I don't even have the words to describe, just the effect that all of this has had on not only myself, but my family. And, it's disgusting and it's un-American.
Un-American is absolutely right.
Yeah.
These people set this up. There was no insurrection. You were there. Was there a violent insurrection by Trump supporters? Were these people violent?
No, quite the opposite. Anyone who's ever been to a Trump rally would know that there's never been any violence. There's been anti-Trump supporters who tried to attack us on our way usually to Trump rallies. But here we see that they've they did what they've always said they were going to do, infiltrate, whether that was just feds or if it was the combination of the FBI and the Antifa BLM. Those men that were breaking that window were not Trump supporters.
What were they trying to do by breaking the window? And who were they?
I don't know. And they have yet to be arrested to this day.
So how did they find you?
Apparently, it's pretty easy, I guess. I think a combination of things. For my instance, for my case, it was easier because the police, after they beat me nearly to death, took me into the Capitol themselves. I didn't go in willingly. And they took my name, my social security number, like 3 different times. And yeah.
So you face up to 30 years and you're charged with what exactly?
4 different charges. Initially it was 6, but they only indicted me on 4. I know it's, if I remember right, civil disorder, aiding and abetting, that's Title 18 USC. Count 2 is entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds. Count 3, disorderly, disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds. And then count 4, disorderly conduct in a Capitol building or grounds.
But you didn't enter the building. You were dragged into the building by people who were violently attacking, savagely beating, and trying to kill you.
Yep, and it also says grounds. So do they plan on charging everybody that was on the Capitol grounds that day? I mean, we came late. We saw no sign, nothing saying that we couldn't be there. There were no police barricades. There were no announcements because, like I said, we were some of the last people to, you know, leave from the Trump speech. And there was nothing.
Okay, and then you couldn't leave the building that you didn't enter.
No, exactly.
You couldn't leave it because you were savagely beaten within inches of your life. You were incapacitated and being held against your will, ultimately, essentially kidnapped by federal agents and DC cops.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing is so backwards, and the video evidence proves that this is exactly what happened. This isn't just some wild and crazy account that you're giving. You're not lying. Yeah. This is all on video. Yeah. You have recordings of all of this. So in what and kind of a system can you be charged? I don't understand.
Exactly. And correct. And even the FBI state in their arresting charges that there's video of me stopping the 2 men from breaking the window.
So you stopped like destruction of property and ultimately potentially violence because these people, who knows what these people's intent was when they got inside of the building that they smashed a window to gain entry to. And we know that Antifa and BLM are products of our own government, very similar to ISIS. This is a CIA operation. These are federal agents, essentially, and operatives working on behalf of our government. So the whole thing on January 6th was set up by our government. And then they deployed actual people to the grounds, federal agent provocateurs and savage terrorists, to frame you for 30 years in prison. You have a family. Your brother committed suicide as a result of the lockdowns. So you can see how COVID and January 6th were used together as a mechanism for murder.
Yeah. And it gets worse. I mean, there are political prisoners that are in there that come to find out that there's a funding Patriot Freedom Project with proof, evidence that they are taking people's money and giving it to who they want. But on top of that, that they are then those who don't go along with Timothy Hale Cuccinelli are beaten, are tortured by the other J6ers. And there have been big names. And I fired my attorney over this. It's really sad because it's bad enough we have to go against our government. But on top of it, the people who are supposed to advocate for us and our fight against these trumped up charges are taking advantage of us and of the American people who donate their hardworking money to programs like this.
What are some of the names that you're referring to? Name them.
Yep. Julie Kelly is right. She knows about it. She's been part of it since day one. Best friends with Cynthia Hughes. Joseph McBride, who was my attorney. After I found out all this and I have all the evidence to back it up, I tried to fire him just recently, my last court date. And what happens? He doesn't send the link to my court hearing. And in the hopes that I would miss it. And then guess what? I get locked up in jail. That's a violation of my pretrial probation. And so speaking out, that's why a lot of the inmates will speak out. They've had their lives threatened. They've been blackmailed. Come to find out that three of the four, Timothy Hill Cuccinelli, Ryan Nichols, Kenneth Harrelson, and Cash Kelly, three of them are confirmed, I just found out today, to be cooperating with the feds in there. So not only are these men torturing these other men, but they're working in conjunction with the feds to make it so bad for these January 6th political prisoners that they give up and give in and just sign plea agreements. This is America? I don't think so. And no one else is willing to speak up because of intimidation. That I have had other January 6th people come and attack me online for speaking up about this. It's not just this. Timothy Hill Cuccinelli is everything that a January 6th, that a Trump supporter is not. He is actually racist. And there's evidence to back it up. This man has had two restraining orders put on him by Jewish people. This is what got me all involved, because I'm a mother of four mixed daughters. And not just that, I am a big supporter of the Jewish people. I follow a more messianic approach to the Bible. I am a Christian, and Jesus is Jewish. You know, like a lot of people, like there's absolutely, this is not okay. And if we don't take care and call out those on our side, quote unquote, who are doing bad things, and we're just supposed to get along so we look united, no, it's going to cause more problems in the long run, and it's going to make us look bad.
There are so many factions, and there's so much discord, yeah. And there is so much division inside of the Patriot movement, the MAGA movement, the conservative movement, the Republican Party, all over the place. Yeah. And the one thing that's consistent is that the government is here to kill us and destroy us and overthrow every right that we had ever had and steal that away and gain complete subservience from 340 some odd million people in this country and around the world, actually, that will serve and be enslaved to the power of one globalist cabal, one world order. And this is all part of it. This is all part of it. And you are standing in the way. And your voice is dangerous to that agenda. So is the voice of this platform, which is why we are so banned from everywhere and why you see hit pieces on this program all over the place. But guess what? The audience is growing and justice will prevail. And if you are a biblical person, like you say to be, then you know that God wins. And so ultimately, you could go to prison for 30 years and you could start a prison ministry inside of there. Thank you for being here to tell your story.
I plan on that, the way this works. Thank you.
Thank you for being here to tell your story. Victoria White, God bless you.
God bless you.
There is a certain and undeniable confidence that comes along with being intellectually dominant. Seriously. And these products from Newtopia that we've been advertising on this show at newtopia.com/Stu Peters, these brain supplements that give you this added focus, added aggression when you need it, added clarity, replacing alcohol in the evening time by doing something that's good for you neurologically, good for your brain, good for your body, completely non-addictive, completely safe, 100% legal. I just can't describe how grateful I am that we have these people advertising on this program and that we're able to bring you these products. This is unbelievable stuff, folks. And you got to go to newtopia.com/Stu Peters, newtopia.com/Stu Peters, and check out these safe, legal, and non-addictive products. These brain supplements will give you the focus and clarity that you need. Added aggression for the gym, an on switch for your brain. Be dominant intellectually. If you are truly Stu Crew, we need you to be smart and dominant all day long. Go to newtopia.com/Stu Peters. Again, newtopia.com/Stu Peters. 2 weeks ago, we told you the horrifying story of Kara Witkowski. I told you about her abusive relationship with a man called Tom, who falsely claimed to have multiple personality disorder as an excuse to beat her or rape her. And he did both. We told you about how Kara attempted to escape, but Tom was given visitation rights anyhow. And Kara's children started to return from visits with Tom, showing injuries and having complaints about inappropriate touching. Well, we told you when Kara reported this abuse, state officials simply accused her of coaching her children to make false claims. And then, most horrifying of all, we told you how the police came to Kara's house, took her children away, and awarded full custody to Tom, the abusive rapist, and how just a few months later, her son James was dead. We told you how the state classified this obvious abuse death as an accident. Well, now Kara's back with more details to share with us about how Illinois CPS and the court system stole her family and then stole her son's life. Kara has a Give, Send, Go, whose link you can find at stupeters.com. That page, by the way, is raising funds to support Kara's legal battle to regain full custody of her daughter and protect her from the same abuse and rape and torture and maybe even save her life. Be sure to give that page a visit and consider donating if you're able. Kara rejoins us now. Kara, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it. So since you were on the program last, we had a major victory with the judge that was overseeing this case. Also, you've been banned from Facebook as the tech oligarchs are trying to silence you while you share information. We will never censor you, ever. And you wanted to delve into specifics with your case.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Since being on your show, we have had a lot of people reaching out to us saying, I can't believe you're on Stu Peters. It's a fantastic opportunity. And I just want to say thank you again for that fantastic opportunity. I also want to state very clearly that my mission here is not any sort of vigilante justice. I do not support any violence against any known family or judges or officials. Simply what I mean by justice is prosecution. If anyone has done any wrong, which there is, I believe, a lot of wrong that has been done in this case. So I'll get into the victory. Yes. So for a year now, my partner and I on Justice for James have been talking about how Judge Renee Cruz was running for the Supreme Court seat on the Democratic side. And we've been constantly pushing how, you know, he was involved in my son's death. His judgments played a part in my son's death, as well as my son's sexual assault. And the primaries were, I want to say, last week, and we followed the primaries, and he came in last place. He will never touch a Supreme Court bench, and this is a huge victory for Justice for James. We are so grateful to everyone who went on our page, who listened to us, who looked at the documents, who looked at the facts, and voted no, or just didn't vote at all for specifically him to be on the Supreme Court bench. So I just want to thank everyone for that. I also want to state that this judge was never elected. He was actually an appointed judge, which is very interesting because when you're an appointed judge, it's not the people that choose you. It's your friends within the court system that get to decide if you should have a seat as being a judge, which I think is a huge problem and something that needs to be delved into. I think the only judges should be those that are elected by the people for the people. In regards to all of that as well, I just want to say I have personally been censored on Facebook ever since being on the Stu Peters show. It took off. It went viral. A lot of groups shared the content. A lot of people reached out to me. And then Facebook removed my account, basically stating that I was... they flagged me for tolerance, which is the sexualization of children. So for me speaking out about what is happening to my daughter, for me speaking out about what happened to my son, Facebook has decided to remove my personal account to silence me. Whereas Facebook doesn't even remove accounts of pedophiles that are in groups that post pictures of children in groups that shouldn't even be on Facebook or pages that shouldn't even be on Facebook. Those people are actually sexualizing children and their accounts aren't even removed. So it tells you a lot about what's going on here in the censorship and the problems that we have with censorship on Facebook today and the information that they do not want out there as opposed to the information that they do want out there. And I think that's a huge problem. In regards to my son, when I was talking about everything leading up to his death, we talked about how I was allowed one last visitation with my son and my daughter, and I wanted to kind of get into that. So when that visitation happened, it was my court supervisor, who again, remember, was my best friend and a babysitter. This person had no qualifications to be a court supervisor, and the court even knew that and just appointed her anyways as a court-appointed supervisor. So we picked up Sasha and James, and when we picked up Sasha and James, we took them back to the house, of course, and my son needed his diaper changed. So while I was changing my son's diaper, my daughter was actually holding my son's hand, which she has never done before. And when I pulled off my son's diaper, his anus was like this big around and it was pulsing. It was literally breathing. And I was very concerned. I'd never seen this, especially on a child that's not even 2 years old. My daughter started tugging on me to come follow her into the bathroom. I followed her into the bathroom. The court appointed supervisor was right there. We had to have the door open a crack because I wasn't even allowed to take my children to the bathroom by myself, as told by the GAL. So while we're in the bathroom, my daughter says, "Grandpa hurt James." And I go, "What do you mean Grandpa hurt James?" And she said, "Grandpa put a toothbrush in James' butt, had me pull it out. I tried to carry him off the bed, but Grandpa pushed me down." And this is the same statement now that she's been saying for 3 years. She continuously talks about a toothbrush being inserted into my son's anus. And as told by Lori's Children's Hospital, I have the medical records to prove it. You and your team have seen them. It specifically states concerns for anal penetrative abuse. Well, a toothbrush being inserted into an anus is anal penetrative abuse. So I do believe my daughter, that kind of damage where there's no anal tone, as stated in the records, because a doctor would put their hand under my son, they would remove it, and everything would just come out of my son. It would be a complete prolapse that would not be able to go back in. And this would be with surgeries, it was not able to go back in. And then even an anal rectal repair surgery is what my son had. And even after that, that damage was irreparable. So I thought it was very important to state what my daughter had said in the allegation that she said that is even in the police reports in regards to this case.
Which completely matches up with the medical records that you have been trying to expose to the public, because you're not getting justice in the court system where you should be getting justice from a judge who was appointed and selected and not elected.
Very true. Exactly. And I do believe that his Supreme Court running had a lot to do with how this entire case went down, because obviously that would be an issue if you're a judge on a case of a child that was allegedly murdered. No one would want you to be a Supreme Court justice. This judge was aware of the cervical spinal cord injury to my son. That was, again, said by the forensic pathologist who reviewed my son's body after the state examiner had done their job. And even if we're going by the state examiner stated it was undetermined. So even that is an issue, because it's saying undetermined. So you don't know exactly how it was caused. And then due to the police not doing a thorough investigation, obviously probably because they were intimidated is what I'm thinking, they wanted to say natural undetermined. But even in the hospital records for my son, it clearly states my son had no underlying illness, no underlying disease, no underlying issues. There was no polyps that would signify any sort of significant constipation that would be enough to destroy an entire anus and anal tone of a child that's not even two. So,
well, Carrie, I mean, clearly you're not crazy, and you're not crazy because, first of all, your daughter is telling you this is what happened. I'm assuming that this is Tom's father when she says Grandpa. Rapist, Tom, who you had a toxic relationship with because he was an abusive person. I mean, this guy is a psychopath, obviously, who claimed to have multiple personality disorder, but he doesn't. He's just a rapist and probably a killer. Your son, horrifically, tragically, is now gone, dead, as a result of this kind of abusive treatment. And then the hospital corroborates what your daughter is saying that she witnessed firsthand by saying that they were concerned about anal penetrative abuse. So you're not crazy. This is exactly what happened. I mean, we can see that. The writing is on the wall. So is there any criminal charge that has been filed against Tom or his father?
So currently the only criminal charges that have been filed against Tom relate to me. So the criminal charges are criminal sexual assault of myself, which was how this entire case started in the first place, which I discussed on your show. And then it was two counts of aggravated domestic battery. And then it was another two counts of regular domestic battery. And then he's already pled guilty to violating my order of protection. I have had an active order of protection against this man now for 3.5 years. So there's no question as to whether is this man an abuser. There's no question to is this man dangerous. There's documents to prove all of this.
In relation to the time, and I don't want to interrupt you here, but I want to make sure that we get everything straight. In relation to the time between when charges were filed against Tom, and these multiple domestic assault no contact order violations. How does that correlate to the time where Child Protective Services in the state of Illinois gave your son and your daughter to Tom? Was one before the other? Which one came first?
So there was never any sort of paperwork, like I said, from Child Protective Services, no safety plan, nothing taking my son and my daughter away from me. So I do believe that was Judge John Dalton, who was the ringleader in all of that and making sure that that went the way it did, because they kept telling me, well, go see what happens in court, go see what happens with the GAL. And if you look up 19F200, which is my case, you will literally see where it says, by order of the judge, no sexual assaults, kits, or examinations are to be performed on the children. Why would a judge put that order in place, especially when there's concern of child pornography, there's concerns of sexual abuse, you have a 1.5-year-old who has repeated prolapse rectums, where he's going to 9 different hospitals to keep doing, you know, procedures for these said prolapse rectums. It doesn't make any sense why a judge would put that order into place. And he stated in court, and I believe I have this on transcript, I'm saying I believe because I'm not quite sure, but he specifically said that if DCFS wanted to do any sort of exams on my children going forward, they would have to come into his courtroom and specifically ask him for permission because it was his jurisdiction.
So he's protecting a rapist and likely a killer, and not allowing for you or the police to have or open any kind of investigation without his express written consent?
That's how it appeared to me, yes. And as I said, I have a lot of this on transcript. I have it on transcript where he's taking my rights away and he tells me just go appeal him in Elgin. He had no reason to ever take away my parentage rights, my decision-making, my medical. And this is all proven because there was never a 604B evaluation. There was never a GAL, and they just gave me back my rights.
Okay, so there's that also a jurisdiction question happening here, because this is a Kane County case, but you have a different understanding of who's actually involved with this from a different county.
Yes. So the way that happened is because recently there was a DCFS investigation against myself. Now, the last DCFS investigation myself, all of these are by Thomas. And the last one against me, they even gave me a letter saying file for false allegations. Let us know that this is a false allegation. And that happened 2 weeks prior to the new one. So the new one should have went the exact same way. So there was a DCFS investigator that came to my home. I'm not going to name names. He came into my home. Everything was fine. He asked my daughter, are you being touched? Are you being hurt? My daughter, of course, said, no, I'm safe. Everything is okay. So he said, I'm going to give you information on how to do, again, false allegations, and I'm going to leave. He did leave. So he left her in my care saying she's okay, no paperwork, nothing, no problems. He comes back 20 minutes later demanding that they take protective custody of her or I leave my own home for the day to ensure her safety. When I asked why, he tried to tell me that the guardian ad litem on my case said I shouldn't be around my daughter. I contacted the guardian ad litem on my case. I have an email of him, which I'll send to you, that specifically says he never said that. He never spoke to this investigator. He never spoke to anyone involved in the case, and that he wouldn't be able to make that recommendation as of right now. So he never even said that. So then I asked the gentleman again, I go, where is this coming from? And he said, well, Cook County has priority over this case, which didn't make any sense because when abuse happens in Kane County, Kane County would have priority. So I went along with everything that they made me do, basically just to make sure Sasha was safe and she was okay. And there was no commotion. You know, I live in an apartment. I don't want anything to get too crazy, obviously. I didn't want to escalate the situation. That's not healthy for Sasha. So I had a friend pick me up. They told me, okay, so you work tonight, you work overnight, call in the morning. He gave me a number to call. I called first thing when I got off of work. The number he gave me was the number for Deerfield DCFS office. It wasn't a supervisor. It wasn't a caseworker. I called them. They had no knowledge of the case. They had no idea what I was talking about. I spoke to 5 different supervisors who couldn't tell me what was going on. They couldn't even give me a case number. And they kept saying, Cook County has priority. Cook County has priority. Well, I called Deerfield DCFS, which is Cook County. I called Elgin DCFS, which was Cook County. And they all just kept passing it back to one another. And I was like, look, there's no paperwork here. There's no safety plan. At this point, I want to go back home. There, what is keeping me from going back home? You know, I asked the legal advice of my attorney and he's like, well, just don't go back home right now. I don't want you to get arrested or anything like that to happen. Let's kind of wait on the situation, which I understand why he would tell me that, obviously, with how escalated the situation was. So I made about 15 different phone calls that day. I spoke to someone at 7 p.m. From Deerfield DCFS. He told me then that now Kane has priority, that they worked something out, and he threw it back to Kane. At 9:18 p.m., I get a call from a Kane County supervisor, who's the regional manager, actually. She's not even a supervisor. She's the regional manager for Elgin DCFS. And she tells me, oh, the case is over. There's no active investigation. You can go back home. Everything's fine. Makes absolutely no sense. Because first of all, in order to have a safety plan with DCFS, the child has to state something happened to them. Also, you wouldn't have an investigator come, say everything's okay, and then leave. Also, if they were actually concerned that abuse happened to my daughter, they would have done a forensic interview. No forensic interview was done. The case lasted 6 days, and then they just gave me back Sasha. And the 6 days, there was only one day where I wasn't with her, where I was with my friend living with her because I wasn't allowed. So nothing was done by the book. Nothing was done legally. There was no paperwork and it was all very bizarre. And they kept telling me that it was coming from Cook County superiors, that Cook County superiors were saying that I was a terrorist, that I was hostile, that I would hurt people, that my child was in immediate danger. And all of these are lies. But what I thought was even more interesting, the timing was, a week before the primaries. So all of this was going on right before the primaries. Yeah. So I thought that
this is 100% corruption. That's what this is. This is 100% criminal corruption. CPS is a trafficking organization. These people are allowing for the abduction, promoting the abduction and the rape and abuse and trafficking and ultimately the murder of babies. They are behind this and they are being protected by an entire taxpayer-funded system that is designed to threaten you and tear you down. And it's supported by tech companies like Facebook and Instagram, who, as you pointed out accurately, will allow for actual pedophiles to have accounts and be on there and promoting satanic ritual abuse, promoting pedophilia, showing awful images that your kids can then go and view. You're in the legal fight of your life right now. And I hope that everybody will get on board with this because her daughter, Kara's daughter, is in grave danger right now. I mean, this has to stop. She has to be protected. I hope that you'll get involved with that legal battle by supporting it. Give, send, go. The link, you can find it at stupeters.com. The page is raising the funds to help to support Kara's legal battle against this corrupt system, and we can win. We're seeing victories, and we need more. Kara Witkowski, thank you so much for being here. We're gonna continue with this case, following up even more. Expect to be back on the Stu Peters Show because we're going to keep on railing these people and showing the proof over and over again that you are a fit parent and a good parent and that CPS and this government is putting a child after one of your children, tragically, horrifically, has already been killed after being sodomized and raped by his father and grandfather, and we got to stop this. So thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless.
Connection between CPS and the Clintons is not surprising. Why did Hillary Clinton say that she was going to be sacrificing a chicken to Moloch in her backyard? What's frazzle drip? What's adrenochrome? What happened to Pizzagate? Why did 9 out of the 12 people who viewed Anthony Weiner's laptop contents commit suicide? Are we supposed to believe that? Is all of this really just a figment of our imagination, or have we been the ones paying attention?
In this country, we've been given narratives for a long time, and it's time for truth. And the victims need to be able to speak out and be heard and believed. And these issues are mostly dealing with children. This is SRA.
I'm a satanic ritual abuse survivor. The Christian church says all the time that they fight an enemy, but I don't think they're aware of how organized and strategic the enemy that they're fighting is, that there is a intentional plan to break their children. An entire war for their offspring.
This is a spiritual war for our children. They are taking, abducting our children, selling our children, murdering and sacrificing our children.
Through the centuries, we know child sacrifice persisted for long periods of time in different cultures. So why are we naive enough to think that it's not persisting and continuing today?
They're sacrificing children at Planned Parenthood, right? And then they're taking the body parts out and reselling them.
Planned Parenthood is accused of some disturbing crimes today.
That's going on overtly now. But back in the day, they were literally passing through the hands of Moloch.
This is a spiritual battle. This is not new. What is child trafficking? Child trafficking is when you kidnap a child for profit.
Recommendations on my list: abolish the federal and state financial incentives that have turned Child Protective Services into a business that separates families for money.
I will step out.
Get out of the car!
We have had several clients come that were trafficked and transported through Child Protective Services and foster care system.
People that speak out like I do.
These people are pedophiles and involved in elite pedophile networks, some of which I've gotten very close to.
Are all facing retaliation.
I don't think that Isaac walked up on that bridge and jumped.
Isaac Caffey out of New Mexico.
This will likely be my last broadcast.